I'm John Alcoholic, and I'm really glad it went down that way today, so that's good. I'd like to thank Pat for inviting me here, and Bill, and Pat was going to pick me up from the airport, but he wasn't there, and but I found a friendly taxicab driver, so I made it here, and now I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad it went down this way, so... But I've been sober since December 11th of 1991, and I'm grateful for that. I'm an educated alcoholic. Yo, don't clap. Clap for yourself. You know what I mean? If anybody's new here, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, especially because I sat out there when this conference first started, you know, and that was nice. You know, I've been to damn near every one. I was married and brought my wife here. I brought my babies here before when they were young. Breathe. Thank you. And but I brought my kids here, so I've been, you know, before I got married, and then after I got married, and I haven't gotten married again yet, Johnny. But I'm thinking about it. But not today. So I've been to this particular roundup since probably the start. I think I only missed it one time, and that's when I showed up in California for a while. But anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, it's important to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I have a purpose here. It's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm really here to talk about and what God and you people have done for me. And it ain't about me. You know what I mean? It's about you. And that's it. I mean, it really is not about me. It's about Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, it's what we were like. So we're all here together, you know, and we're all on the 50-yard line doing the best we can right now. And I believe that, man. I believe that, you know. Well, people choose to go drink. I love that. People choosing to go back. I chose to go back out and drink, you know. You did not choose to go back out and drink. I've never made a choice to go back out and drink. The insane idea has won out in my life before, and I've gone back out and drank. But I never chose that. I'm going to choose this, and I'm going to give up my job, and I'm going to give up everything. I'm going to choose to urinate on myself again. I choose that. You know what I mean? I don't ever choose that. Just what happens when I drink alcohol, you know? And I was born in Cincinnati. That is where I am from. I do have roots there. Pat, like, give me one of them already. But I did grow up there, and, you know, I had trouble from the start. I have a brother and a sister and a mom and dad. My mom and dad, like Karens, you know, they were married forever, and they're happy, grossing. They were happy together. My mom and dad loved each other, and they were cute with each other, and they flirted all the time, you know. The only time I ever seen them fight was with me, you know. I was like, what are they going to do? They were happy people, you know, and my brother was... a genius, you know. He got into books and was smart, and my sister was there, and but I didn't pay attention, you know. I paid attention to my mom more than anybody else, and I loved her and I hated her, you know. She always told me what to do, and I always did the opposite thing. I remember at kindergarten, she said, don't cry, and I didn't cry, you know. I didn't know. I thought I was a good boy, you know. I would end up going to 13 different schools before I ever got out of high school. You know, and I just never felt right. I just didn't feel like I fit in. And it was, I never had to, I went to church, you know, as a kid. I was raised Catholic, and I'd go up to church by myself. Because I thought that was where God was. You know, he's behind that little steel door they got there. So I went there, you know, and I would go in there and try to pray. So I felt like that there was something wrong with me, you know. And when I was 10 years old, I had been to like 3 different schools already, so I had a slight disciplinary problem. I didn't like being told what to do. So I got a pint of whiskey, and I stole it from my dad or whatever, and I took it into the woods, and I drank it. I grew up on a dead-end street. They call it cul-de-sacs nowadays. When I was growing up, they called it a dead end. So I lived on a dead-end street, you know, and there was woods back there, and I remember getting this pint of whiskey, and I drank, and it burned going down, it burned coming back up, and I pushed it back down, and that was it, you know. The trees got greener, and I went like that for the first time ever. I never had that before, and I liked it. I love God, but whiskey was quicker, screw it, you know what I mean? And that was the way it was. It was, no thought, no effort. Like, gee, you know, and at 10 years old, you're not going to be able to go out and get a 40 or shorty. You know, I'm just not going to be able to do that. They're not going to give me a 40-ounce beer. And so I had to find other things to do. So at 10 years old, I started huffing gas. It was leaded back then, too. I became a gas. I know. But I huffed gas, and I would do that till I passed out, you know, and it was, you know, my dad knew I was huffing gas. My mom knew I was huffing gas. They were like, my dad would take me out on the porch and make me breathe fresh air after I passed out from huffing gas. You know what I mean? He'd be like, breathe, Johnny, breathe, and don't light up the goddamn cigarette. You'll blow us all up. You know what I mean? And it would be like that. You know what I mean? And my parents, they were always helpful. They got rid of the gas lawnmower and bought an electric one. They were always trying to take care of Johnny, man. I swear to God, they did. And, you know, I stole the neighbor's gas can and was back in business. And I don't remember the first time I huffed gas. And I don't remember the last time I huffed gas, but I huffed gas, you know. And anything was better than being sober, even leaded gasoline. I'll tell you that right now. Because I could not stand living sober, you know. I mean, I hated me. She said, oh, don't worry, we'll all be judging. I said, hell, you ain't going to judge me anymore. And I judge myself 10 times harder. I've judged me, you know, than anybody could ever judge me. I've been my own worst enemy right here. I've met the enemy. Hello. You know, it is me. You know, if you still think it's them, good luck to you, man. Have another bottle of whiskey till it's you, I guess. I don't know, but it's my problem, man. I am it, you know. And it ain't nobody's fault, you know. It ain't even mine, and I didn't know. I'm an alcoholic. I have alcoholism. I never meant to do any of the things I did. I love people. I judge myself by my ideas. People judge me by my actions. It's just the way it is. That double life, you know. And it's the way life is. You know, I'm just an alcoholic. And I drank, and I roared through my mother's life and my father's, you know. And my mother was a black belt Catholic. And she was, man. She prayed the rosary every day. And she went to church every day. You know, and I made her a better Catholic. Bet your ass I did. I love my mom. you know, they were just, you know, but I didn't have no money, you know. And I'm young, you know. I'm like 13 years old and I have to drink, you know. And I don't know I have to drink. But it's Friday night and I'm stirring. You ever stir? And I'm 13 and I'm stirring, you know. And I can't stir very long. I have to do something. And then I'm going to lash. They said, well, alcohol was my problem. You know, I was a jerk when I was sober. I was irritated when I was sober. It's like, how could it be alcohol was the answer to my problem? I was a jerk when I was sober. My mouth was 10 times worse sober than it ever was drunk, you know. Sometimes drunk, I like to tell people how I felt about them, you know. You regret it the next day, but God, it felt good that night. But I was stirring. My mom had money, and I would steal it out of her hand. You know what I mean? And she would just look at me with disgust. And why do you do these things you do, Johnny? Why don't you know? And I didn't know. I didn't know. You know? Why you steal my money? You know? And I didn't know. Why do you take it out of my hand? I didn't raise you. You know? And I would hear that. I didn't raise you that way. We were poor growing up. You know? They grow up in the Depression, man. And my mom and dad. When my mom lost her house, my grandfather had a cigar factory, and the Depression killed it, so they moved to Dayton, Kentucky, and then in 1937, the flood killed their house. So they were kind of paranoid in losing stuff in life, you know. They were penny pinchers, you know, they were Depression babies. You meet anybody in there from that era, and they're penny pinchers, man. And they were, you know, and they really didn't trust the system, you know, and I'm stealing her hard-earned money. We were poor. We weren't rich. We were poor. I swam in garbage cans with my best friend. You know, we just emptying them out, fill them up with water and swim in it. And that's what we did. And, you know, my life was a garbage can. So, I mean, I liked it, but I liked alcohol. And the older I got, the more accessible alcohol became, the more I drank. It was like that. You know, at 15 years old, I didn't have an identity but loser. I felt that. You're a loser. I felt like a loser. You know, I didn't have any identity, and I got a job at Coca-Cola. And that was my identity. You know, what do you do? I'm John. I work at Coke. You know. And I liked that job, and it was a bust-ass job, but I liked it. I didn't mind using my body to work, man, because I sure the hell knew I didn't have a brain. So I didn't mind using my body to work. You know, it didn't bother me. So I I was, you know, I had learning disability, attention, you know, I would have had attention deficit disorder if they had it back then, but they didn't. So. Anyway, I found, you know, that was my identity, that was my job. I went to high school, you know, and I got kicked out of this high school I was at, and I wanted to stay there. It was, you know, the high school of the neighborhood, and it was like just a prideful thing. It was all guys high school. It was Catholic high school. I got thrown out my junior year, you know, and I worked at Coca-Cola full-time and got turned 18 my junior year of high school when the law in Ohio was still 18 to drink. And I grew up on the tail end of disco. I'm not proud of that, but that's I did. And I had the parachute pants, and I went to a place called Lighthouse Limited, and it was, oh, that's Mean Gene, the Price Hill Queen. What's up, baby? So I like that, man, and I like going to bars where you can watch yourself dance, you know, and, people would stand right in front of the mirror, and they would, and I'd stand off to the side and just kind of glance and say, "Yeah, you got it going on, you know what I mean? You are gonna get lucky tonight, you know." And I would. And MTV and all that stuff just came out, you know. It was just cable just hit so much for the on TV. If you remember that, we had cable now, so you could watch this music television. Michael Jackson was dancing and all this other stuff before he did his other whatever he did. But anyway, he was dancing. You never know about them people from California, man. I don't know. But not you. Not over here. Just the entertainers, you know. That's it. You never know what. But I would learn how to do the moonwalk and stuff like that. I ain't proud of none of that stuff, man. My dad gave me a gallon beer jug when I was, you know, 18. And some kids, they get a sense of well-being when they sit there and they throw ball with their dad and they say, "Me and you, Dad." I'm so emotional. I'm sick. I don't feel well. But, I cry at Kmart openings for Christ's sake. No wonder I drank, Jesus. Lord. Anyway. So I learned to do all the moonwalk and all that stuff, and I go out. My dad got me that gallon beer jug, and I was like, "Me and you, Dad." That's how I felt. I felt that bond with my dad, you know. It's like me and you, you know. And I would go out. I drink this gallon beer, a big jug, and play Michael Jackson's Off the Wall album, and practice the moonwalk and get my hair just right and stuff. And then I go to Lighthouse, and they play that song. I get out there. I dance around. I'd do the moonwalk, grab myself in the crotch, and throw up on the dance floor. So I never had much success at that stuff. So that's the way life was. I mean, that really is the way it was. And you know, I got back in, talked my way back into that high school. For some reason, they let me back in. I went to the principal, and he let me back in, and I graduated from that high school. And I thought all my problems would be over. I'd be a full-time Coke man. You know, I got it what it takes. And I'm going to be a full-fledged Coke man, you know, and I'll be president of Coca-Cola someday because they'll recognize my potential, you know. And I wore that jacket everywhere, man. Even when I got sober in AA, you can ask some of these girls, remember, I wore that Coke jacket to AA. I'm like, "Look, I work at Coke," you know. Anyway, I'm going down fast here, so here we go. I would be out every night till 2:30 in the morning, you know, and I didn't want to be anymore. I knew I had to go to work, and I would hear New York, New York, and think, "Oh, damn," or "Tiny Bubbles." I'd hear that back then, and you know, it's time to go home, you know, and then you have to get some White Castles because you can't go home without White Castles, and get up and go to work. And then you promise yourself you're not going to do that again, and you're doing it again. And you think, "I'll get a six-pack at Stop and Rob or whatever they are," and go on home. And I'll just chill for tonight, you know, and then that six pack kicks in, you know, and so's that disco fever, man. I gotta go. And I'll be back out there and man, and ended up doing that every night, and then I knew there was something wrong, you know, with my drinking. I saw it. People, well, there was this bar I went to where the one side was adults and the other side was the kids dancing. I'm 19 years old, and I'm on the adult side watching the kids dance, wondering what happened, because I can't do it anymore. You know, and what I wanted was to have fun and drinking again. I wanted the magic and alcohol back, and it wasn't coming back, you see. And it never came back, you know, and then it gets progressively worse. And then you don't even know what happened at all, you know. And I'm baffled, you know. I'm baffled. Mom, you say that stuff. I say that shit to me every day. The same thing. I don't know. I don't know. And what happened was I thought, well, if you fall in love, you'll be all right. Oh, God, yes. And so I started hooking up a girl, you know what I mean? I liked this girl at Kroger's, and I saw her out one night. And I decided to follow her home from a bar because I loved her. They call that stalking nowadays. They didn't call it stalking back then. But I wanted to fall in love, so I stalked her home, and she says, "Aren't you that creep from Coca-Cola?" I love you. They're like, get away, man. And, well, I couldn't face her again. I called detox, you know. And that's really what happened. I mean, I saw them carrying it commercials, you know, back in the 80s, man. It was like 83. And they were, "Are you an alcoholic?" And I'd just switch the channel usually like that. And I'm glad I wouldn't get sober nowadays. It'd be like, 1-800-LOVELINE. Call me, Julie. I'll talk to you for $2.99 a minute. Because I would have stalked her, too, if I could find her. But I called detox, you know, and I went into the treatment center, and they were telling me alcoholism's a disease. I said, "Alcoholism is not a disease. It's a matter of willpower. You just got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I'm a Coke man," or whatever, you know. And I just need to chill out. And I went to AA. I went to AA, and I liked AA. I liked the people. I did like the people. Oak Street. I went to Oak Street, man. They said, "Don't go to Oak Street." I went to Oak Street. I wanted to know what the hell was going on at Oak Street. And I went to this place called Oak Street, and it was beautiful, man. I mean, there's people there, and there was magic there, and there was a fellowship there, but I wasn't there. I was 19. I thought, I ain't no alcoholic, you know? I'd be like, "Oh, you're so lucky to be here so young." I think, "Oh, yes." I felt like I should be dead, you know what I mean? I'm wanting to die, you know? I really don't want to be alive anymore. I am trying to drink myself to death at 19, and you're telling me I'm lucky to be an AA. I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm going to hang out here with you for the next 20 years and then die." You know, if I could pull a trigger, I would do it, Jack. But I just can't seem to do it because when I take a drink, I feel a little better. I want to kill you instead of me. I don't know what happened. But, so I could never do it, you know. And my boss gave me a promotion at Coca-Cola after I got out of treatment. I couldn't believe it. He said, "Any man big enough to face his problem deserves a promotion." I said, "Damn right." And he gave me a promotion. I was a senior merchandiser at Coca-Cola. He was the only merchandiser at the time. And that's the way Coca-Cola does all their business today, is merchandising. I was the first merchandiser at Coca-Cola. And imagine that. And I was the first merchandiser to get fired at Coca-Cola, too. Yeah. Because I started drinking again, and I don't know. My boss sat me down. I was 20 years old now, and he sat me down. He said, "I don't want to let you go, John. Let you go is like one of my own sons go. I don't want to do it, but I don't have a choice that you're drinking." And I knew he was telling me the truth. And I was out of a job. I was out of identity, and I lived to drink. You know, and I drank Wild Irish Rose wine. I'm a wino. Thank you. And I'm a Skid Row alcoholic with parents. I really am. That's the only reason I was not on the street, is I had parents that let me stay in their basement. You know, otherwise I would have been, because I drove around in a little Green Hornet with an FM converter, and I listened to love songs, a station called Warm 98. And I would drive around all night, and I drink Wild Irish Rose, and I cry. And I thought, if I just had a woman, I'd be all right. And that song, I Can't Live If Living Is Without You, come on. I'd be like, oh, man. And then I get a warm feeling all over me because I just urinated right up on myself. And that was daily existence, you know. And I wished for the end, you know. And I went back into treatment. What are you going to do? They gave me the promise plan. If it doesn't work the first time, here's a free one. Come on back again. We'll teach you how to get to A. So I went back and I made it out of detox. And I went out on my first pass and got drunk, you know. And I wanted to be sober. And I didn't stay sober. So I ended up getting drunk. And what ended up happening to me was that, what did happen? I don't remember. There's that attention. I ended up, lost my job. I went to IKIPA in 84 because I was hanging around in 80 AA. And at IKIPA, I got attracted to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was really what happened. It was in Chicago. And I went and ended up getting sober in AA, and I stayed sober 7 years, and ended up getting drunk again, you know. And I'm a guy that became an alcoholism counselor overnight. I'm one of them. There ain't nothing wrong with it if you're an alcoholism counselor. There's just something wrong with it for me. I don't know about you. I can't do it. I can't do it and stay sober, you know. I got knowledgeable. I could quote the big book at you. In meetings, I would start to do that for the new girl, mainly. That's the way it was. Be like, John, how you doing? Be like, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless, again, I can experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks I see others take with impunity. How are you? Oh, man, I could quote that book, you know. And I got so educated, my sponsor said, dude, you know, because I had problems with women. I hate to admit it, but I did. He's like, you are really going out of your way to drink, you know. He said, why don't you just go drink? This is 7 years sober. I said, I could drink? He said, by all means, please do, John. I didn't get mad. I got excited. I thought, I love you. You know, you tell me today, I tell you to go bye-bye, you know. You go drink. Yeah, you know, I'm not going. But back then, he's like, I can drink. He said, please do. And somebody in AA gave me permission to drink because I was making a heavy goal of life. And really, I felt like I did when I was 10 years old and I popped the top. He says, call me before you drink. And I called him before I drank. And I drank for 3 days, you know, and I said nothing happened. And I got relief from drinking, you know. And it's like, and I'm in an AA telling you I got relief from drinking and then nothing happened. I got fired from my job. Because I was an alcoholism counselor. They didn't like us drinking very much. And I'm telling you, nothing happened. So I hang out with you 30 days. And my mom had cancer. And I didn't want to be drunk in front of her again. Because I put her through enough tests. She had terminal cancer. And I didn't want to be drunk in front of her. And I was drunk in front of her. I went back out after 30 days. And went on a 5-day drunk. I'm drunk in front of my mom. My mom sits me down at the kitchen table. And she says, what am I doing that's making you drink again? And I knew it wasn't her fault. And I punched my ticket in there. I punched my ticket in there. I swear it did, you know. And there was something wrong when I was sober the first time. I didn't know who the master was. You know. I thought I was. You see. Well, my mom said that, and I just kept drinking. I ended up in a fist fight with my dad the night before he buried his sister. This guy in A tries to save me. Come back to A. What? And he ends up drunk with me. That was nice. And we were going to go to Florida and get sober. We never made it out of Covington, Kentucky. So he got arrested. I took his car, his credit card and stuff, and I go to my dad's bar that I've been in since I was 5, and I had peanuts and crackers and whatever, and I'm sitting at the bar, and they bring up the money from the night before, and my mind says, steal it, because there's your drinking money, and for whatever reason, I didn't take that money. I don't know what happened. And a guy named Tommy crossed my mind and told me a dirty joke when I was 20 years old. He was sober 4 years. And Tommy had a good AA to me, you know, and then he drank again, and Tommy was never the same, you know. And I think it was Tommy's dad that got my attention. Because Tommy's dad would drive Tommy to AA, and Tommy's dad was like 90. bringing his 50-year-old son to meetings, trying to get his boy some help. And that's John Callahan, you know. So, I didn't take that money. And I fell asleep. I got up the next day, and I go to Covington to get me a bottle of Wild Irish Rose, and they don't have it, and I walk into Russell Street, an A clubhouse, and A sounded different to me. I got with my sponsor that night. My sponsor wasn't there, but my sponsor was, and I said, alcohol is a boss. And he said, Johnny, alcohol has always been the boss. It will always be the boss when it comes to an alcoholic. In my life, that's true. Alcohol was the boss. I met it. Bill talks about it in his story. He says it. I met my match. Alcohol was my master. And he gets sober after that. And that was the same way as Bill. I met my match. Alcohol was my master. And I surrendered, and I didn't even know that happened. And I didn't waste my time trying to figure out why I drank again. Don't, if you're new and you bounce, so what? Don't try to figure out what happened. You're not going to do any good, because it'll talk about it in the big book of Alcoholics. Ask him why he started to drink again, and he has no more idea why he took the first drink than you do, and that is none at all. And that was good enough for me. When I came back, I didn't have to solve the riddle. You won't need to make him aware of his spiritual deficiencies. He will know it. And I knew it. I knew it. You know? And so what do? I got with my sponsor. He said, I saw you trying to make your life happen. He said, are you ready to let life happen to you instead of trying to make it happen? Can you take life as it is, John? You might just be average. Can you handle being average and stay sober? And I didn't know. I didn't know. And then my kind of was like, no, because if you feel like a loser, you got to prove you're something. My whole life I had to prove I was something. So when he said, I didn't know. I didn't know if I was going to be able to participate like that or not, you know. And then, and I said, I'll try. And he said, Monday night we go to Lebanon Penitentiary. Why don't you go along? And I went to Lebanon Penitentiary. I was 5 days sober. Got in Lebanon Penitentiary. I said, what kind of meeting is it? They said, it's a speaker meeting. I said, who's talking? They said, you are. And I said, I ain't got nothing to say. They said, well, you can tell me what it's like to be 5 days sober. So if you're new, do that. Somebody should go somewhere, go somewhere. You know? Because it punched me into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I followed him. I went and followed my sponsor. I love my sponsor, man. He saved my life, and I trusted him with everything. I didn't feel comfortable around anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous except my sponsor when I came back. You know? You know, it was Joe. You know, and the reason I asked Joe in the beginning was because Joe would talk at conferences like an arrogance. Who's your sponsor? Killer Joe. For the women again. Really? But, you know, it didn't turn out that way. It didn't turn out that way at all. When he told me his story, I believed him. See, I'm not up here fibbing you. This ain't nothing. You know, when he said his story, I believed that he really was who he said he was. And where he came, where he said he come from. And that if he could stay sober, that I could stay sober. He put himself on the same playing field as me. He says, I don't know what you're thinking, dude. He goes, I don't know what room you think I'm in. He said, but I'm in the same damn room you are. And I looked around, I said, damn, he is. So he must need this thing like I need this thing. So he put himself on the same playing field. And I went to penitentiary meeting every Monday night. It saved my life. It really did. And I took care of my mom before she died. And I was so glad that I got an opportunity to do that. I know not everybody gets the opportunity to do that, but I'm glad I got the opportunity to do that. You know, and I never said I was sorry, because my sorries don't mean nothing. You know, I just told her I loved her and she did a good job. Because what else did she want to really know? I said, you did a good job. And we talked about living and we talked about dying. We talked about it. And every Monday night I was at the Lebanon Penitentiary. And the night before my mom died, I was 8 months sober, and I didn't know if I was going to stay sober or not. I still didn't know. You know, I listen to Norm every night. Because that's the guy that made the difference. I would pull up. I would just play this tape of this guy. I don't know who the hell he is. But he would talk about walking down the sunny side of the street. And I believe my sponsor, and I believe Norm. I believe nobody else. I believe two people. That I could have this thing. So when my mom had 24 hours to live and he said, go to the penitentiary meeting, I went to the penitentiary meeting. I didn't want to, but I went. I've never brought up a topic in a discussion meeting, but that night I brought up the topic in the discussion meeting. Oh, I said, my mom's got 24 hours to live. They're like, hey, dude, man, what the hell are you doing here? I said, that's why I do AA. That's what I do. Am I going to clean Kleenex? I'm running out. Jim, I'm glad it's a guy, for Christ's sake. Hey? Anyway, so I did. I got here. I got some. Thank you. And I did. You know, and the guys went around and they shared their experience about losing their loved ones. You know, and I realized that I had a gift in AA, man, and I was overpaid. The AA worked. You know, one guy in there said the only experience he ever had was death with his wife, and he goes, I killed her. And he said, sometimes I get so mad I want to dig her ass up and shoot her again. And I thought, my God, man. It's a true story. And I thought, man, dude, you know, and I went home that night. My mom was still alive, you know, and she said, you and I have come a long way, and we had, and I watched her pray the rosary, and she wanted a priest around, and my whole family made a circle around my mom, and she was dead, and I saw the power of AA. You know, I saw it. I tapped it, you know. I didn't mean to. But I tapped it. I stayed with my dad a couple years after that, and then he passed away. I come home one day from work, and I found my dad dead, you know. And I stayed sober through that, and now I'm on my own. I moved out of my house when my parents died, that not before. I hate, well, they wanted me there, but they... Because I was really helpful, you know. No, but they did. I mean, my dad wanted me there when my mom died. He really did, and I wanted to be there with him. And I paid him rent to live there. That's how I worked it out with my dad. And I paid him rent to stay with him, you know what I mean? And I got along with my dad, you know. And then when he died, I moved to the east side of Cincinnati, you know. And for some reason, 6 months after my dad died, I wanted to get married so I could have kids. And I found a little girl in a halfway house for women that wouldn't go all the way, so I took her all the way, and I married her right away. I didn't even know how to spell her name when I married her, but this is just what I did. I don't recommend it, but, you know, if you're somebody like me, you can't talk them out of it anyway, and don't call your sponsor, for God's sakes. Call Jim W., because he did it too. You know what I mean? And I did. I called Jimmy W., and I said, I want to marry this girl. He said, come on over. I got a preacher I can get you right now, and I did. I went over to Jim's house, and now... Sure enough, he had a preacher. Showed up with a preacher. I got married to this girl, you know what I mean? And we go on a honeymoon, and I loved her the best way I could. I really did, you know. And a week after we were married, I come home, and she was drunk. And I called my sponsor, Dad. I said, she's drunk? He said, where'd you meet her? I said, a halfway house. He said, what the hell do you expect? And he said, well, you know, you didn't marry her because she was an alcoholic, you know. And hang in there, man, you know. And try, you know. And make her feel free to come and go as she pleases. To drink if she wants to drink. Because I wanted to chase her down the street. He said, chase her if you got some kind of power over alcohol. And I knew I didn't. You know, and the marriage didn't work out, but I had two beautiful babies that were here this weekend. You know, we got divorced in the... Life went on, you know, and then everything caught up with me, and I lost everything. I'm a guy, I stayed sober, but you know what was cool? I was 10 years sober when I was lost everything. That makes you look real cool. He's working a hell of a program. Look, he just lost everything. We'll see if Johnny stays sober or not now. Well, when I come to AA, I had nothing. So guess what? I knew how to stay sober with nothing. And I knew it wasn't going to be that way forever, see. And I remember I was just, it was like my 10-year anniversary, and my roommate threw me out because he got a girlfriend with 5 kids that he's going to marry or whatever. I don't know what he did. But I got thrown out of this house, and I don't have anything. I don't have enough money to do anything. I draw zeros on my paycheck. Don't feel sorry for me, any Al-Anons in here. But I did. I drew a zero on my paycheck, you know, and it was all gone through child support. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And I packed up my bags and I went to California. I just did. I thought, well, I'm going homeless. It's December. And if I'm going homeless, I'd rather go down to California. It's warmer there. It's warmer in Florida, by the way, than California at this time of year. But I went to California, you know, and I'm sitting around and I go to Pacific Group and I like the Pacific Group, you know, and I like the energy I feel there. I tap back into AA, you know, and I like it. I asked this guy, he said, what are you doing out here? And I start crying like I always do. And I said, will you be my sponsor? And he said, yeah. Be at Bellflower on Monday night, but I don't want to go to Bellflower. I don't want to go to their group down there. I'm in Sherman Oaks, and I don't want to go to Long Beach or Bellflower for nothing. You know, it take me 3 hours to get there. I didn't want to go down there. Well, he said, be here. But I didn't want to drink, so I said, okay, I'll be there, Jack. We'll see. And I would get my car, and I would drive to Bellflower. You know, and I would go down there, and I would go to Johnny's meeting. I didn't want to be there. I wanted to stay with the Pacific Group. But I happened to be stupid enough to ask this other guy to be my sponsor, and I ended up around Karen and them, which was good. It was good because I would leave Bellflower. I hated going. I really did. I hated going, and I'd leave Bellflower, and I'd come up on Sherman Oaks, you know, and I looked out at the Valley of California. I thought, man, you're living the dream. Because I tapped back into the power. You know, I tapped into the power, and it didn't matter what I had or didn't have. I found something, again, that it wasn't dead, that it was there, you know, and that I could have it, and it was going to be all right. I go to California, and the first guy meets in Rafford Hall, I go out there, and I shake this guy's hand, and he said, what brings you to California? I tell him my story. He lost 2 girls in a divorce, and he went to Florida to kidnap them. He didn't have to kidnap him, but both his daughters were living with him. And it was years later, he gave me hope. See, he gave me hope. You know, and I... Anyway, he gave me hope. We know what that means. I tapped back into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and it felt good. And it just felt good. And I came back to Cincinnati, and I stayed sober, and I got a sponsor back home, you know, and I got Bob Sizemore. I can say his name now. He's dead. And I got Bob for 3 years, and I'm glad I had Bob. And we weren't alike. We were not from the same school. But I asked Bob to be my sponsor when I got back, and he said, yeah. He goes, boy, you sure you want me as your sponsor? We don't really come from the same school. I said, oh. And he knew how to work with drunks. See, Bob would go anywhere and work with an alcoholic, anywhere at any time. Bob taught me how to work with drunks more than anybody else because I watched him and he did it, you know. He would go anywhere. His boy of his had trouble, you know, or one of his pigeons had trouble. One of Jim's brother got blew up, you know, and Bob went to be with Jim. Bob was like that, see, and I wanted to be like Bob in that way. Not everywhere. He was a hillbilly from Kentucky. He had another brother named Bob, for Christ's sake. He did. So I wanted to be like Bob in a way. So I went, you know, and I had Bob. And last year, Bob got cancer, you know. And Bob got cancer and knew he had 6 to 12 weeks to live, you know. And he said, got a light. And I quit smoking after that. Thank you, Bob. I did. I quit smoking. I'm not, this isn't a Smokers Anonymous meeting, but I quit smoking after that. You know, a bunch of people that he sponsored sat around and we had a meeting and he talked about the joy of Alcoholics Anonymous in his life, you know, and he went out that way, man. He went out with dignity, he went out with respect. He was a man of Alcoholics Anonymous and I liked that, you know, and I was glad to be a part of his life. And when he died, I went back out to California because I didn't know which way to go and I turned to the other guy I knew, who I still use, but I don't call him my sponsor anymore. I don't tell him he's my sponsor either because I don't like to call him that because it gets weird when I call him my sponsor, but I call this guy every Tuesday now, you know, and I talk to him, and I'm not the best father in the world, but, you know, I am a father, and I have my girls here today, and I'm glad to be with them, you know, and I think about them every day, and I talk to them on the phone every day still, you know, I talk to them every day on the phone, and it's the best it can be, you know, that alcoholism
keeps my ex. Why isn't this ain't her story? She's been here, been in this conference, you know, and alcoholism will keep that person outside and call me on the phone and say, bring the girls out the door. And she can't come in here. But I can come in here. And I can stay sober. And I can be useful. I can be happy. And I can be whole. Because of you. So thanks.